Start on the very last line of Chaf Vav Amud Beis, and we are in the middle of talking about the topic of Yesh Mukso Chasi Shabbos, which to review means, we know the idea of Mukso means something that was inaccessible or unprepared or not Mukhan, Bein HaShmashos typically, is then Mukso for the whole Shabbos. Yesh Mukso Chasi Shabbos and Ein Mukso Chasi Shabbos refers to the question of what, say, it was Mukhan, was usable as Shabbos began, or as Yontif began, and then at some point during Shabbos or Yontif, it fell out of use, out of its usable state, and then it fell back into its usable state. So if you say, Yesh Mukso Chatzi Shabbos, so then the mere fact that, or the fact that it fell out of use at one point means it's out of the game. It's now Mukso the rest of Shabbos. If you hold Ein Mukso Chatzi Shabbos, then the fact that it fell out of use temporarily doesn't affect it fundamentally, and as soon as it's back in use, usable, you can use it on Shabbos because it wasn't inaccessible Bein HaShmashos. So we want to try to figure out what the halacha is. Do we say Yesh Mukso L'Chatzi Shabbos or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma mi Poen va... I'm sorry, before that, Amar Rabbi Zeira, Tashma mi Poen v'adashim. So Rabbi Zeira suggests we learn it from the halacha with regard to Poen and adashim, which are like lentils and beans. Da Poen v'adashim meikara chazu lachos. At the beginning of Shabbos, you could eat them raw, these type of beans. Shadinu bekadera, and then if you, on Yontif, start cooking them, adchu aluhu, they are temporarily inaccessible, they're not able to be used, meaning you're able to eat them raw, you're able to eat them fully cooked, but you can't eat them while they're being boiled, they're inaccessible. And then gamar bishulayu, and then as soon as you finish cooking them, chazulu, then you can eat them again. And yet, says Rabbi Zeira, you're allowed to eat these at the end. So this shows us that ein mukto chazi shabbos, because here they started off accessible, being able to be eaten raw, now they fell out of use, they were being boiled, and now they came back into use. So that shows you that, and we allow you to eat them. So that shows you ein mukto chazi shabbos. So Amarle Abaye. So Abaye says, "Utameich." If that's true, following your logic, tikshiulcha kederus da'alma. That there would be a problem with any item that's being cooked as Shabbos or Yontif enters. Da'astam kederus da'alma ben hashmashos rosh chosen. Because if you think about it, any item like your cholent, let's say, which is being cooked, or maybe cholent's not a good example because you could eat that really hot. But, you know, something like, let's say, for example, these beans. So they're being cooked as Shabbos enters, right? And they are boiling. They're inaccessible. They're boiling. You can't eat them. We urta achlinan minayu. And then the next day, when they finish cooking, we eat them. We eat them. And yet, it's not because, right, this wasn't a situation where they were accessible Bein HaShmashos and then fell out of use and then fell back into you, then went back into use. This is a situation where Bein HaShmashos itself, they were inaccessible. And yet we say that it's not a problem. And if it's true that anything that's unusable Bein HaShmashos is now Muktzah for all of Shabbos, so then your normal item that was being cooked Bein HaShmashos and was very hot and then you had to let it cool down, should not be accessible. And that's clearly not the case, because we know you could eat food, a dish that was still boiling Bein HaShmashos. So rather, he says, there's a rule, El gamru bi de adam lo kami boilan. When it comes to something that's within a person's control, where a person himself is, his actions have caused this thing to change status, that's not considered mukta. That's not the situation that we're talking about when we talk about mukta and when we talk about mukta l'chazi shavs. Ki kami boilan gam rubi yedei shemayim. What we're talking about when we talk about mukta and when we talk about yetzel mukta l'chazi shavs is where it was out of your control, is bidei shemayim, that its status changed. That's when the issue of nolad comes in. That's when the issue of mukta and inaccessibility is relevant, but not by gam rubi yedei Shemayim. The Shaar Mitzvah and Balacha points out that this is relevant to the consideration of, let's say, for example, a non-Jew cooks bread for you on Shabbos. Or not for you. If he's cooking bread for you, so then there's Gzeir Rabbanan and says you can't do it. It's Mir Akum or some extension of a Mir Akum. It doesn't work. But let's say a non-Jew is cooking bread for himself on Shabbos, right? So do you say that because prior to Shabbos, as Shabbos began, this was just flour and water and eggs. It was raw ingredients that were not able to be eaten. And now its status changes on Shabbos itself, that's considered muktzah, right? Or do you, it's like nolad. Or do you say that nolad only applies, as our Gemara is implying, by a situation of gamru bidei shemayim, where it's natural, you know? But gamru bidei adam, something that was formed by a person on Shabbos, maybe the idea of muktzah doesn't apply. And in fact, Shulchan Aruch Paskin, sorry, Brother Sister Brewer here, in two places he points out, the Rama says in Rishon and Beis, Eino yudi shosa min alayim shalmi alamikach. Someone, a non-Jew who makes shoes for sale, and it is, the shoes get completed on Shabbos. Mutter Yisrael amakiro eilach vilkach meno b'Shabbos en alam. As long as you don't talk about the price, you could actually take those shoes, even though before Shabbos they were just raw scraps of leather, and now the non-Jew made them on Shabbos. He didn't make them specifically for you, but after the fact, once he's made them, you can take them. And that's based on this notion that gamru bidei adam is not a problem. It's only gamru bidei shemayim that iser of nolad, iser of muktzah applies. And then in Shin Chaf Hei, he talks about the non-Jew who makes bread for himself. Can the Jew eat that bread, assuming it's kosher, obviously? And the Mechaber quotes some who are aseret, some who say it's mutter, but the people who say it's mutter would say that, again, it's based on this Gemara of gamru bidei adam is not a problem, only gamru bidei shemayim is a problem. Okay, so now we're going to get back to the topic that we had been discussing earlier in Daf Chaf Vav, which was the situation with the Bechor. If you remember, a Bechor, we explained in the last Mishnah, a Bechor nowadays cannot be eaten, and that cannot be given to the Kohen. And so what happens? He has to be Yirah Ashi Stoiv. He hangs out in the pasture until he gets some kind of mum. And then if he gets a mum, then he can be shechted and eaten. And the question was, let's say the mum occurs on Yontif, or let's say the mum occurs before Yontif, but the Kohen, not the Kohen, the expert in Bechoros, in Mumin, wasn't able to check it. And now the question is, are you allowed to check Mumin on Yontif? And the Mishnah talked about a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda had said that it's possible you can check for mumin on Shabbat on Yontif. Rabbi Shimon said, "Kol she'enu mumo nikar mi bojo mein zemen amuchan." You can't, as Rashi explained there, you can't check a mum on Shabbos, and it says because it was nira kamisakein, it's imposing a new status on the animal, and it's like dun din. It's such a significant psak that it's like you're creating a din. It's like the Bez Din is paskening a din on Yontif, which is prohibited. So Rabbi Shimon said, you cannot. So now the Gemara is going to try to figure out what's the halacha. Is the halacha like Rabbi Shimon that you can not, or is it like Rabbi Yehuda that you can check a Bechor on Yontif? Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Havale Yahu Bechra. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi had a Bechor. He had an animal that was a Bechor. Shadri l'kameid Rabbi Ami. And he sent it to Rabbi Ami, Savar d'lolu mechazia. And Rabbi Ami held that you can't check the status of the Bechor on Yontif. You can't check whether the mum is a mum kavua and whether the Bechor is capable of being shechted.
Did he send it to him because he was an expert, or he just sent it to him as a question?
Maybe he was an expert. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. Amar Rabbi Zreika, Vitaim Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Halachak Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Zreika, or maybe it was Rabbi Yirmiya said, I don't understand. We have a general klal that we learn in the Gemara in Erevin that where you have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And so why isn't it permitted to paskin on the status of this mum on Yontif? Hadar Shajr v'kameid Rabbi Yitzchak, Nafcha. So then he sent the animal, the Bechor, to Rabbi Yitzchak, Nafcha. Savar de l'machazia, and again, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, he demurred, he said, we can't paskin on the status of this mum on Yontif. And here again, Amar Leih Rabbi Yirmiya, Vitamer Rabbi Zrika, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, all across Shas, whenever there's machokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, halacha is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, so why can't you check the status of this animal on Yontif? Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said mutter. Amar Leih Rabbi Abba, My time Loshav Ketinu Rabbanu Lemevet Uvdok Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Abba now interjects and he says, why are all these rabbis complaining that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? Why weren't they comfortable here saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? So Amar Lei, excuse me. So now Rabbi Zrika says to Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Zrika was the one of the people who said halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that it should be mutter. So now Rabbi Zrika says to Rabbi Abba, "Ve'at ma biyodech, do you have specific knowledge that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in this case? Why are you criticizing us for paskening like Rabbi Yehuda? All over Shas we paskening like Rabbi Yehuda when this machlokes is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Why do you think here the halacha might be like Rabbi Shimon?" So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Abba responded by saying the following: "Hachi Amar Rabbi Zera, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon." He said, "I have a Mesorah. I know that Rabbi Zera said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in this case." So Amar Mantehu. So someone in the Beis Medrash, Rashi says, "Echa min atamidim." We don't know who it was, but someone piped up and he said, "Azki va'asa kohasam. I will one day have the zechus of going to Eretz Yisrael. The agmra l'shmaita mipumei demara." And I'm going to learn this halacha directly from the mouth of Rabbi Zera, who we just said holds like the one who paskin like Rabbi Shimon in this case. So this unknown Talmud said, "I want to hear this directly from Rabbi Zera. This is such a significant psak that we hold like Rabbi Shimon in this case that you're not allowed to determine the status of the bechor of the mum on yantif. I want to go to Eretz Yisrael and hear the psak from his mouth." So it turned out that he was able to go. Kisalik lahasam, when the Talmud went to Eretz Yisrael, ashkechil Rabbi Zera. So he found Rabbi Zera. Amar Lei, and he said to Rabbi Zera, "Amar mar halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Is it true that you say that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon on this topic?" Amar Lei, lo. So Rabbi Zera said, "No, it's not true. Anam mistabra amri. I said it's logical. It's makes sense to think that the halacha is probably like Rabbi Shimon on this topic. I didn't say it definitively, but I derived from another halacha that it's probably true that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. How do we know that? Why? What is that? What tipped me off to the fact that we pass like Rabbi Shimon here? Midekatani b'masnisin, from the fact that in our Mishnah it says Rabbi Shimon Omer kol she'in mumo nikar mi bojom ein zemin amuchan. From the way that Rabbi Shimon articulated this halacha, he could have just said, the Mishnah could have said, Rabbi Shimon Omer ein roen mumin biyomto. But it didn't. It said, Rabbi Shimon says that if the mum wasn't identified as a mum kavua from before yantif, so then it's ein omin amuchan. It's pushed aside. Now we explained that in the Mishnah of Rabbi Rashi said that doesn't mean ein omin amuchan in terms of Hilchos Muktzah, because we know Rabbi Shimon is the one who paskins ein muktzah, right? Really, what Rabbi Shimon meant to say was ein roen mumin biyomto. But again, he said it in kind of a funny way. The katani la bebraisa belashon chachamim, and on Chav Vav Amud Beis, we quoted in the name of Rav Oshia, I think it was. Excuse me. Yes, about 10-12 lines down, we quoted Rav Oshia himself quoted a Mishnah. Excuse me. He quoted as the Chachamim, right? The same Lashem. So this halacha was quoted by Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia quoted a Braisa, which said this in the name of the Chachamim. Usually we paskin like the Chachamim. So the fact that this Braisa, and specifically Rabbi Shimon's position, was quoted in the name of the Chachamim, tips us off to the fact Shvamina Mistabra Kavasei. That indicates to me, says Rabbi Zera, that we probably paskin like him. So then the Gemara says, "My Havela." Okay, enough discussing back and forth. These Amoraim like thought that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda here, and these Amoraim thought we paskin like Rabbi Shimon here. What's Adalaksha Alacha? What are we gonna paskin? My Havela. So Rav Yosef said the following: Tashma. I'll come and teach. Detalya ba'ashli rivrivi. Rashi explains, ashli rivrivi means big ropes, big thick ropes. Meaning, because this was now quoted, this halacha that we're about to say was quoted in the name of three major poskim, major talmidei chachamim. So this is a serious, serious memory that we should pay attention to. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi, Amar Rav Yossi ben Shaul, Amar Rebbe, Mishum Kala Kadisha de Birushalayim. They quoted in the name of Rebbe, quoted in the name of the Kala Kadisha de Birushalayim, the leadership of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shimon v'Chaverav Amru Halacha k'Rabbi Meir. They quoted and they said Rabbi Shimon and his friends, they said Halacha is like Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, Amru v'inu kashisha minei. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So they said, why did the Rebbe, again, Rebbe quoted the Kala Kadisha of Yerushalayim. Rebbe quoted the leadership of Yerushalayim as quoting Rabbi Shimon and his friends, right? And they're quoting Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara is trying to understand, why are the Kala Kadisha of Yerushalayim in the time of Rebbe quoting a halacha in the name of Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon is referring to Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, and the Kala Kadisha of Yerushalayim, they are a generation above Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. They are greater than Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. So it's kind of funny to see the leadership of Yerushalayim saying the halacha is like Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya said the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya is their Talmidim, is a generation below them. So why are they citing as authoritative something that the Talmud said, right? So the Gemara answers, Ela b'shitas Rabbi Meir amruha. Rather, what they mean to say is that which Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya said is authoritative because it reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, which was a generation higher. Right? It's like, it's almost like if Rav Schechter was giving a shir and he quoted a halacha and he said that, let's say, Rabbi Glasser was sitting in Rav Schechter's shir, and Rav Schechter quoted a halacha, and he said, we know this is the halacha because Rabbi Glasser said this is the halacha. Rabbi Glasser is Rabbi Schechter's Talmud, let's say. So it's funny for Rav Schechter to be citing as a halacha as authoritative because Rabbi Glasser thought it's authoritative. So what we're saying now is we're saying, no, that's not what Rav Schechter said. Rav Schechter didn't say the halacha is authoritative because Rabbi Glasser said it. He's saying that which Rabbi Glasser quoted is authoritative because Rav Soloveitchik said that halacha, meaning my own Rebbe. So it's kind of saying, Rav Glasser, you, my Talmud, are correct. What you said is correct, and we know it's correct because my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik said that. That's what's going on here. The Kala Kadisha of Yerushalayim is saying, Rabbi Shimon, the Chaver of Amr Halacha Karim Meir, what Rabbi Shimon and Chaver have said, what our Talmudim said is authoritative, is correct because our own Rebbe, Rabbi Meir, said that halacha. It's validating what the Talmud said based on what the Rebbe said. That's what the Gemara says. Elo b'shitas Rabbi Meir amruah. Okay, so what are we talking about? Ditanan. Where did Rabbi Meir say this? How are we going to derive from something that Rabbi Meir said what the halacha is with respect to paskening the mum on yantif? Ditanan. Because we have a Mishnah that says hashochet es habachor, someone who shechted a bechor. Now, before you shechted it, you forgot to show its mum and determine whether or not this was capable of being shechted, whether or not the animal already had a mum kavua. So you shechted it, and now you take the animal, the shechted animal, and you show it to the posek to figure out whether there's a mum kavua there. So Rabbi Yehuda said, no problem. Either there was a mum or there wasn't. So whether you showed it to the posek before or after doesn't really make a difference. If the posek says, no, this was a mum, and identifies it as such, so then you could eat the bechor, no problem. Rabbi Meir Amar, Rabbi Meir, however, says, Hoel v'nishchat shalo al pi mumcha aser. So he says, since it wasn't shechted properly, it wasn't shechted after the psak was already given, it was shechted prematurely before the psak was given, it's aser. Alma, we see from this, kasava Rabbi Meir, rias bechor lav kriyas trefa. So we see from this that Rabbi Meir holds that paskening on a mum of a bechor is not like paskening a simple tarfus question. Rias bechor mechayim. And in fact, a ria bechor, according to Ramir, has to be while the animal is still alive. Rias treif alachar shchita. But if you're trying to figure out whether an animal was treif, that can be checked even after shchita. Why would that be? Because the act of paskening, we're saying, is actually making a chalos of a new status, that the act of paskening is intrinsic. It's not just that the chacham, that the posig, looks at it and determines the mitzias based on what he sees, and then if it has a mum, then it's kosher. If it doesn't, it's almost like the halacha by a mitzora. Right? Rothberger mentioned this the other day to me, that he had mentioned this in his Iyun Shir last week. That it's almost like the halacha of a mitzora, where the Kohen's psak actually creates a chalos, and the mere mitzias, the mere medical situation, that's what's going on in the skin, is not as significant as the Kohen actually paskening the status. And so here too, the medical mitzias here isn't what creates the chalos as much so as the psak of the posek. It's a significant thing. Whereas by treifa, all we care about is the mitzias. Was this animal a treifa or not? And so if you paskin it after the animal shechta, that's also okay, as long as you figure out what the mitzias was. So
it's
therefore,
status of the knife. If they find that the animal's a treifa,
what's the status of the knife if the animal is
treifa? The shaft.
Oh, do you have to kosher the knife?
What's the status of the knife? Yeah, before that, yeah, the animal is assumed to be kosher until you go ahead and you open it up and you examine it.
There's blood there anyway, so I don't think we generally don't assume that the knife is kosher, and I assume it's maybe not hot enough. I don't know, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure why it's not, probably not hot enough. We don't eat by the boys based buya anyway, but we don't eat by the makom hashchita, you know, cook that anyway. So I don't know, it's an interesting question. I
don't know, people that have sheep's head,
yeah, like, I don't think the status of a treif affects the knife at all, meaning yeah, I don't know. Okay. So it says, once you get to this notion, excuse me, that paskening on it is creating a new chalos, so now we can conclude from that a treifa you could even paskening on yontif, because again, you're just assessing the status of it. Rias bechor, me'er of yontif. You have to do me'er of yontif because again, as Rashi had pointed out, it's like a done din. It's a done din, meaning that you are being done a din, that you are being making a significant psak here, and it's near kemisakein, and so therefore that cannot happen on yontov. It has to happen from erev yontov. So that would mean, right? That would mean that we have our answer to our question, and we hold like Rabbi Shimon that you can't be matir bechoros, you can't paskin on a bechor on yontov. So that's what Rabbi Yosef says. Rabbi Yosef says, we see from this sheet of Rabbi Meir that we pass on to Rabbi Shimon. Amrei Abaye, but Abaye interjects and he says, not so fast. So Amrei Abaye, Atu Hasam Biron Mumin Pligi, is that really what the fundamental machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir is in that Braisa, in that Mishnah? That we're talking about Roan Mumin, the Knasa Pligi. They're really talking about a kenas, meaning that the respective shitas and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir there don't tell us anything about whether paskening on a bechor is a change in status that would be asar on yantif. Why? Amar Rav Bar Rav Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, bedukin shebaayin kulei alma lo pligi dasar, mishum demishtanin. Again, we're talking about a situation that Mishnah was, where you shechted the animal first, and then you need to figure out whether there was a mum. So, if the mum that was discovered after the shechita was a problem with the eye, some kind of dukin in the eye, some kind of problem with the eye, so everyone agrees that paskening after the shechita is not going to work, because mishtanin, because that changes. Meaning the mere fact that you see this irregularity in the eye after the shechita might be because that irregularity cropped up after the shechita and there wasn't a real mum kavua before the shechita and the animal was improperly shechted and therefore you can't eat it. So everyone agrees that if the posek first saw the mum in the eye after the shechita, that's insignificant and that's not going to work. Ki pligi b'mumin shebeguf. They argue with respect to a mum shebeguf. Rabbi Meir savar gazrina mumin shebeguf atu mumin shebeayin, and Rabbi Meir says that there's a gzer drabanan here that says if you find the mum in the guf after the shechita, that won't allow you to eat the animal because it's a gzera atu a mum in the eye, where that wouldn't have been a definitive psak if it took place after the shechita. And Rashi points out here maybe it's because of a kenas that you shouldn't have preemptively shechted it; you should have figured out what its status was before shechita. And so the Chachamim were gozer a knas on you for shechting it preemptively without first determining its status. And that's the basis for Rabbi Meir saying that you can't eat this animal. It's not because he holds fundamentally that that its status is determined by the psak, right? And therefore, there's no therefore we can't conclude anything in terms of the halacha of whether you can paskin mumin on yontif based on that shita Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda savar well gazrin. Rabbi Yehuda simply says you don't make that gazer, and that's why you can determine the status of the mum even after the shita. And then Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak Masnis Nami Deka. The language of the mission itself points in this direction, points to this conclusion that Rabbi Meir is not fundamentally holding that paskening afterwards is a problem because you need the psak in order to establish the status, but rather it's just the gezeira. Why the Katani Rabbi Meir Omer Ho V'Nishchat Sholal P'Yimumcha Aser? Again, he's saying it's almost like it sounds like a knas that you're being punished from the fact that you shechted it preemptively without the psak of the mumcha, rather than so again shmamina knasa hu dekakanis shmamina. It shows that Rabbi Meir is really concerned about a knas, but not because he fundamentally holds that the psak is a fundamentally important chalos that would not be able to be done on yontif. So we're left without any resolution on this issue, at least according to Abaye. Abaye rejects Rav Yosef's proof from Rabbi Meir. Okay. Ami Vardina'a. So now we another story. Ami Vardina'a is this person. Rashi says Vardina'a is Na'ahaya. Val Shem Vradim Nikra. And he says maybe it's because of the where he lived. Whatever it was. But it was this person, Ami Vardina'a. Chazi Bukhra de Benesia. So he saw a pasan, I guess, on a bechor in the house of the Nasu. Chazi bechor de Benesia. Hava biumatava lo hava chazi.
English is he's the official translator. He was the bechor examiner.
He was the, okay, I'm sorry, good. Amivardinai chazi bechor de Benesia hava. He was the examiner of the bechors in the house, in the bechorim, I guess, in the house of the Nasi. And biyumatav lo hava chazi, and he would have a policy of not paskening on the status of bukhar on yantif. Asu v'amru lehu Rabbi Yami, so they told this to Rabbi Yami. Amru lehu shapir kavid duol chazi. So Rabbi Yami said, I endorse his policy of not checking bukharim on yantif because he shouldn't be checking bukharim on yantif in accordance with the shita of Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara then says, Ini, is that really true? Rabbi Ami Gufei Chazi. Rabbi Ami himself did paskin on the status of Bechorim on Yantif. So the Gemara answer is no. Rabbi Ami didn't do that. Rabbi Ami Kichazi Me'esma Abachazi. Rabbi Ami would always check the animal before Yantif. Ubiyom Tov Shili Kamashayel Hechi Hava Uvda. And the only thing he did on Yantif was he asked follow-up questions to determine how the animal got the mum. And that was relevant, as we'll see in a moment. Kihada Ugavra, similar to the situation of the person, Daisi Bukhru Kameh Durava, Apanya Damala Yumatava, who brought a Bukhur to Rava on Erev Yantif, Hava Yasiv Rava Vikachayef Reshe, and Rava at the time was brushing his hair, he was getting ready for Yantif. Right, this is Yuma, Yuma. He was getting ready for Yantif, he was brushing his hair, he was, and so he didn't really have time to deal fully with the Bukhur situation. So what did he do? Doi Eine V'chazi Umume. So he quickly glanced, and you know, as he's kind of getting ready for Yantif, he glances over, looks at the mum, and takes a mental note of what mum it was, whether it was a mum kavua. Amrulei, but he didn't say anything. He didn't pass. Amrulei Zila Idna V'Salam Achar. And he says, go and come back tomorrow on Yantif. Kiyasa Umachar. When this person came back on the next day. Amar hichi avovda. So he said, how did this mum get established? Amalei have a shajin sari bach gisa dehutza. He answered, I put barley on the other side of the fence. So the animal was on one side of this rackety fence, and on the other side of the fence were barley, which the animal would have wanted to eat. Vava ihu biidach gisa, and the animal's on the other side. And when he went to go and ram his head to eat the barley, ayoreshe uparte hutso was foseha. So he lowered he moved over his head, and the sharp fence split his lip. That's why how he got the that's how he got the mum. Now there's an incentive to do this, right? There's an incentive to get a mum because then you can eat the animal. Right. Otherwise, you're left feeding the animal for years. Who knows what's going to happen? So you want to bring about a mum early on. So this is a good way of doing it. So Amrulay, so Rava said to him, Duma atkaram tolay. So he said, did you do this purposefully? Maybe you intended for the mum to get there. Amrulay lo.
No.
He said, no, I didn't do it. He said, I didn't do it. It wasn't. No. I don't know if Rava believed him. The story's kind of left off there. So now the Gemara says, and who? What's the difference? Umina timra de garama aser. Who says that forcing the mum, that causing the mum directly or indirectly is aser? Again, we have to distinguish here between directly causing a mum, which is more of a problem. We'll see in a moment. Let's see. The Tanya, because we have a brace that says, mum lo yebo, that there should not be a mum on it. Engli elish lo yebo mum. Rashi explains here that means that the Torah is making an injunction and says you can't cause a mum. Maybe you can indirectly cause the mum by doing some trick like with the fence and the barley here. Or it's a similar trick. You put a little dough on the ear and then the poor guy is going to be subject to a dog who's hungry and biting his ear. So how do you know you're not allowed to do that? Talmud Gomer kol mum. Amar. I'm sorry. Tell me about kol mum. The pasuk says kol mum. There's an extra word kol amar mum. The amar kol mum. So the extra word kol teaches you not only are you not allowed to directly inflict the mum, but you're also not allowed to indirectly afflict the mum by, for example, putting a piece of dough on the ear and attracting a dog to bite it, or the trick that we see that happened here, perhaps, where he put barley on the other side of the fence and it caused his lip to be split. So it's not okay. So again, but all this is by way of answering and explaining what Rabbi Ami's practice was. Rabbi Ami, paskin on Erev Yontif, and it was only the follow-up questions about whether the mum had been intentionally rendered that was asked on Yontif itself. But again, we have no proof here for Shitas Rabbi Shimon of Ein Roen Mumin B'Yom Tov. And that's where the Gemara leaves it off. Now the Gemara has a Mishnah. Now there's a Mishnah. Behema shemesa lo yazizena mimakoma. And if an animal dies on Yontif, you shouldn't move it. You should just let it sit there because it's muktzah. Umaisa v'shelas Rabbi Tarfon aleha. And they asked the question about this halacha. They asked Rabbi Tarfon whether this halacha is true. V'alachala shenitmes v'nichnas lebeis ha-me'. I'm sorry, v'alachala shenitmes. And also the status of chala that becomes tamei on Yontif. Chala is one of the matnas skuna. You're not allowed to make it tamei, and if it's tamei, it's now not capable of being eaten by the kohen. So the chala shenitmes also should be mukta on Yontif. V'nichnas lebeis medrash v'shal v'amru lo lo yazizam b'mekomim. So they went to the beis medrash. They asked Rabbi Tarfon this question, and he says just like the animal that died shouldn't be moved, it's muktzah. So too, chala shenitmes should not be moved, it's muktzah. Rashi explains that normally, you can't eat this anymore because now it is tameh, but you also can't destroy it. Normally, you'd be able to give it to a dog or you'd be able to use it as fire fuel. But you can't do that because there is a klal or a halacha of in surf in kudshim b'yom tov. You can't do that on Yontif. And so therefore it has no use. It's frozen and you have to just wait until after Yontif. You can't touch it. And again, just like this dead animal, you can't touch it.
If you're baking bread on Yontif, what do you do with the challah you're taking?
Put it aside. Yeah, in surf in kudshim b'yom tov.
You can't put it on the side because most of you don't touch it.
Well, you can't really separate chal and yontif either, right?
So
because the halachas you probably, like we've said previously with respect to truma, you just eat it and you leave over some at the end. I don't know how we actually pass them. It's probably something like that. Okay, now the Gemara says, Lema tenan stama dol Rabbi Shimon. We know that there's a fundamental machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We've been dealing with it from the very beginning as to whether there is such a thing as muktzah. Now, we know that Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold that there's no such thing as muktzah ever. In a certain defined and narrow category of cases, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether or not there is muktzah. And typically, that those cases fall along the following description. Something that is a kli, or ochel, something that is generally not muktzah, and at some point it becomes rendered unusable. So, for example, this is a good example. You have an animal that you would normally be able to shecht on yantif, so it shouldn't be muktzah, it's perfectly usable, and now it becomes an avela. So now it's not usable at all. So Rabbi Shimon holds, in that situation, we thought, right, Rabbi Shimon says that it is not muktzah, it's not a problem. And Rabbi Yehuda holds it is muktzah. Let's see. So here we see, says the Gemara, that we have a Stam Mishnah that seems to be paskining against, like against Rabbi Shimon.
Because you would think that you should be able to move it.
You think, oh, right? If Rabbi Shimon were the author of this Mishnah, he would have said you should be able to move it. Why? Because we know D'Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer. This is from the very first daf. Mechatchin esadulum lufnei abeima ve'asanevelu lufnei aklavim. There is some use for this nevela. You could, in theory, feed it to dogs, but Rabbi Shimon says that's not a problem. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imhoisa Neveh Omer of Shamus Asura. And Rabbi Yehuda was the one who said, no, it's muktzah. If its status changed on Yontif itself, or on Shabbos itself, it becomes rendered, it's muktzah, right? Because you had a more expansive use for this on as Shabbos began, and then it's status changed significantly, and now it could only be used as scraps for dogs. So Rabbi Yehuda says it wasn't muchan in that respect, and therefore it's muktzah. Rabbi Shimon said no. Once it's muktzah for one purpose, just because its purpose significantly decreased to only being able to be used as a nevela of ne'aklavim, that's not a problem. So the Gemara says, afilu tema Rabbi Shimon. Maybe you can say here that even Rabbi Shimon would say that you can't use it, that it's muktzah. Why? Moda Rabbi Shimon b'bali chayim shemesu sha'asurin. Because maybe Rabbi Shimon agrees by an animal that dies that it's usur. This is a good point to just talk generally about this machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. It's complicated because it appears so many times and never really fleshes itself out fully. But one way of thinking about the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon is as follows. That Rabbi Yehuda holds, I'm saying this based on a shir I heard from Rav Shechter where he was explaining the mahalich of the Rav, Rav Salavechik, to the whole machlokas Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. So that Rabbi Yehuda holds muchan, that the Rabbi Shimon holds, Rabbi Shimon is the mekil here, right? Holds that muchan me'aleinu acher, that something is, that's muchan, that's let's say, for example, a kli or a ochel, that's muchan, is muchan me'aleinu acher zman. It's muchan now for the purpose that you envision and you can contemplate it being used now, but it's also muchan la'acher zman if that changes and it's now, and after time something happens to that thing so that its status changes, not its status, so that its use changes, the original hachana carries it over even to a new use. So for example, if an animal was alive and it had a certain use in mind, you could check the animal and eat it, and now it changes significantly because it becomes an avela, but it still can be used now for a limited purpose for feeding to dogs, the original hachana covers you even after that status changed, right? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, only if the originally envisioned purpose carries through does that original hachana help you. And if it changes significantly, so now it's a nevela and can only be used to feed dogs, that's not considered hachana, that's not considered muchan, and it's aser, right? However, Rav Shechter points out, based on this Gemara specifically and others, that Rabbi Shimon is going to be limited to a situation where you could have envisioned that change happening. So if an animal, let's say, for example, was perfectly healthy, even Rabbi Shimon is going to say that when it gets killed and it becomes an avela, it's muktzah now, Because you couldn't ever imagine its status as changing to something that's just scraps for dogs, right? The other example was, let's say you have a stool or a chair. So the chair, if the Gemara in Shabbos talks about that chair changing, let's say the chair breaks, the back of this chair falls off, but you're still left with the seating part of the chair that could be used perfectly well as a stool, right? You could put your legs up on it. So Rabbi Yehuda would say, once the back of the chair breaks, this is no longer a usable chair, right? Maybe you need more than the back to break, but let's say the back and the whole back leg breaks, so now the whole thing kind of collapses. You can't sit on it in any real way. So Rabbi Yehuda says this is mukta. And Rabbi Shimon says it's not mukta because now it's usable as a stool. It's muchan mei aleihenu la'achar zman. Its original achana, its original envisioned use as a chair, carries you through, and you can now say it's muchan even in its new use as a stool. However, what we're going to say is that now is that we're going to refine that slightly and say that Rabbi Shimon's only going to allow you to use that as a stool now if it was a very wobbly chair, where before Shabbos you could have envisioned this whole very significant change happening.
It had to be a possibility.
It had to have been a possibility, right.
A live animal.
A live animal, you wouldn't have imagined that it would one day become scraps for dog. A good, healthy chair, you would never imagine that it would, in the middle of Shabbos, it would become relegated to a footstool. But if it's a sick animal, right, so then you can envision it changing its status and becoming just scraps for dogs. If it's a wobbly chair, you could envision that, very soon this might just become usable as a stool. That's where Rabbi Shimon's heter is going to come in. So now let's look at this Gemara in that light, and it'll make it a lot more sense. So we say here, afilu tam Rabbi Shimon. Maybe Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah is saying that it's muktzah, that you can't use this animal, because why? Moda Rabbi Shimon bebali chayim shemesu shasurin. Because Rabbi Shimon holds that a healthy animal, right, a healthy animal where you never could have imagined that it's going to become scraps for dogs, that is usur. So the Gemara says, now the Gemara points out that that's only true according to one Amor. This happens to be Machlokas Amoraim. Hanichol Amar Bara Meimar Mishmei Derava Domer Moda Rabbi Shimon Bali Chaim Shemesu Shasurin Shapir. That all works out well according to the Man D'Amar, that in fact a healthy animal that all of a sudden gets killed and is now only scraps for dog, that even Rabbi Shimon is going to say is Muktzah. El Amar Brei Rav Yosef Mishmei Derava Domer Chalok Hayor Mer Rabbi Shimon Afigu Bavali Chaim Shemesu Shemutarin Ma'ikul Meimar. What's he going to say? What's the Amora who holds that Rabbi Shimon's heter applies even for something that you couldn't have envisioned it having this catastrophic thing happen to it? What are you going to say? So Tirguma Ziri B'mehemas Kudshim. So there you're going to have to say that this Mishnah must be talking about Behemas Kudshim, where it's completely set aside. There's an Isser Hana. It requires you to just bury it, as Rashi says. You can't even be podet. This thing has absolutely no use once it dies. Dekanami Dekatani, and in fact that's consistent with the rest of this Mishnah anyway, because the Mishnah goes on and talks about things like Kudshim. De'alchalash and Nitmes, Ma'alchal Dekadisha, Behema Dekadisha. So it's logical to think that just like the Sefer of the Mishnah, which was talking about Chalo, which has to do with a Kudshim kind of thing, that the Reisha was also Kudshim. So now the Gemara says, well, now that you've pointed out that, and said based on the Sefer and the Mishnah that the Reisha must be talking about Kudshim, Elataima de Kadisha, that implies that the only reason why this Behema that died is now Mukta is because it was Kudshim. Haduchulim Shari. But the implication is that if we were talking about a regular animal, a chulin animal that a person could eat, that would be mutter, even that would be mutter, right? That would be mutter. So honey chulamar brei drav Yosef mishmei derav adamar chal chayir b'shem naf bali chayim shemesu shemutar and shapir. So then that makes sense according to the second mandiyamar, the second amora that we quoted, who holds that Rabbi Shimon's heter on mukta for an animal that dies applies even if you couldn't have predicted that this animal would have died, even if it was a perfectly healthy animal. Elamar bar meimar mishmei derava damar moda hayari b'shimon bali chaim shemesu shasurin. But according to the Amor who says that Rabbi Shimon says that a perfectly healthy animal that dies is mutter, because his shita applies not only where it was foreseeable that the animal would have turned into scraps for dogs, but even where it was a perfectly animal, healthy animal, and you couldn't have foreseen that that would happen. So then what are you going to do? We kind of backed ourselves into a corner. Like Lo Meimar. So the Gemara answers, Hachamai Askin Ben Mesukenes. So the Gemara answers that no, it makes sense. Just say that the Mishnah is talking about where the animal wasn't healthy. It was a very unhealthy animal. It was foreseeable that it would have died over Yontif and would have then turned into just scraps for dogs. And that's why Rabbi Shimon holds V'divrei HaKol, and therefore even the Amora who holds that way will be consistent. And Rabbi Shimon says there that it's mutter. Okay. Right, because again, because the Mishnah is only talking about Kachim, the implication being that Chulin would be mutter. Mishnah says, Ein nimnin ala behemo chatkilo biyom tov, aval nimnin alea me erev yom tov. V'shoftin v'chalkin b'neim. We're talking now about a financial transaction where you're going to buy an animal or a split, you know, buy a share of an animal on Yontif. So the Mishnah says you can't do that on Yontif, but you can do it on Yontif, and you can then shecht it on Yontif, and everyone gets their piece. So Gemara says, "My ein nimnim." What does this mean? Amar Rav Yudah or Shmuel ein poskin damin lechatchila al behema biyom tov. You can't buy an animal. You can't say, "Okay, I take that share of the animal for $100." Can't do that on Yontif. Hechi avid. So what should you do? Amar Rav maybe shte behemos. Umamidin zuetzel. Oh, so here, the problem is you're left with a problem. Let's say you want to strike a deal with a guy who owns an animal and you want to buy part of his animal on Yontif. So for us to evaluate what the actual value worth of the animal is and for me to then talk in dollars about, okay, I'm going to get $20 worth of that animal or $50 worth of that animal, that's problematic according to our Mishnah. So what should you do? What's the Eitzah for you to solve this problem? Take an animal that's of the same size and same value, presumably, put it next to it and say, okay, it looks like these two kind of share characteristics. They both are of the same value, same size. V'omer kazu kazu. And say these are similar. And then on after Yontif, you'll be able to take the animal that survived and use that as a model and try to figure out what the financial, you know, how much it's actually worth dollar for dollar. Tayinami hachi. We have a similar brice that says, Lo yomer adu mechaveru heini imcha besela. Again, you can't talk in terms of dollars of a business deal. I'm on the deal. I want to buy, $20 worth of that animal. But you can say, okay, I want half the animal. I can have a third. And then after Yontif, you'll figure out what the actual value was. The Shar Mesir Halacha interestingly points out a whole bunch of similar halachos where on Yontif we allow you, or on Shabbos and Yontif we allow you to enter into a business transaction, so to speak, as long as the money aspect isn't spoken of. So, for example, on Sukkos, you need an esrog, and there's a guy selling who has been selling esrog, and he still has inventory left over. You realize you didn't buy your esrog before Sukkos, so you can transact, in a sense, by taking, he can give you the esrog on Yontif, as long as you don't talk about the dollar amount. You say, okay, we figure out what it's worth after Sukkos, we'll figure out how much I owe you. Where, for example, similarly...
Hopefully you're not going to get ripped off at the end.
Hopefully you won't, right, exactly. So some element of trust here. You'll end up in... You're going to end up in a din Torah because of the uncertainty if everyone's not on board. Similarly, there's very interesting halacha in Evin HaEzer that, let's say, for example, a couple gets married on Friday. This was the minhag. Very often they get married on Fridays. And they didn't have time before Shabbos to write up the ksuba, or they forgot to write the ksuba. They were all very excited. It was a happy wedding, and no one got around to writing the ksuba. Now it's Shabbos, and you can't write a ksuba on Shabbos. But the halacha is that the husband and wife are not allowed to be together unless there's a ksuba, right? So the halacha is, in Shulchan Aruch, that if the husband sets aside a mashkon, he sets aside something and says, the value, I'm securing my ksuba obligation on this item, so that if, you know, there arose the need for payment of a ksuba, you could collect it from this item, so it doesn't need to be a shtar. That satisfies the requirement for a ksuba. And that can be done on Shabbos. That's another example where you're kind of doing a financial transaction, so to speak, on Shabbos, as long as you don't get into the nitty-gritty of the details of the dollar amount, that's okay. And then finally, to leave off with a halacha relevant to this time of year, there's a Mishnah in Shabbos which says that if Erev Pesach was Chalios B'Shabbos, right? So Pesach fell out on Saturday night, the first Seder was Saturday night, and you're in Yerushalayim and you didn't yet buy your sheep for your Karban Pesach, and there's a guy selling sheep there in Yerushalayim in preparation for the Karban Pesach, you can, the Mishnah says, Maniach Taliso Etzlo, you can give your talis, or you can give some mashkon with him to secure your future payment. And again, as long as you're not talking about damim, as long as you're not talking about dollar amounts, you can acquire that sheep on Shabbos in order to bring it as a Karban Pesach, and then you'll pay him, you know, you'll redeem the mashkon later for whatever dollar amount is appropriate. With that, Achak HaShavu Sameach.
We're on to next Sunday.